Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Gift of Knowledge interview series. These interviews are intended to create a higher level of awareness and education for all those who listen to them, and ultimately, to make us all more successful in our chosen careers. Please enjoy this informative piece that is being provided to you by your loan professional.
Hi, this is Jim Sanger with Loan Toolbox, and I want to thank you for taking the time to meet with us this week for another of our Gift of Knowledge interviews, where we like to bring people to you that that can absolutely add value and bring additional tools to assist all of us in our day-to-day business. This week, we happen to be joined by Bob Berg. Bob is an individual who I've had the great pleasure of getting to know more recently. Actually saw Bob speak the first time probably 8 to 10 years ago, before the Jupiter to Quest, the Hope Sound Association of Realtors, and Bob knocked it out of the park then. And from that point, a couple of weeks ago, I was actually reading a review of one of his books called The Go-Giver. And basically, Bob is someone that I consider to be an absolute expert at not only helping people grow their business through giving to others, but more importantly, the first book I know that he wrote that I put a lot into use of my business is called Endless Referrals: Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales. And Bob, I just want to thank you for taking the time to sit down with us.
Oh, thanks, Jim. It's my absolute pleasure.
You know, in addition to meeting with us, Bob has also spoken before tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people being joined on the stage by people with from the likes of Zig Ziglar to Robert Kiyosaki, Brian Tracy to Mark Victor Hansen, who we know from the Chicken Soup book. He's been on stage with Larry King, as well as the late President Gerald Ford. So it's really neat to bring people that have had such an opportunity to bring what they know to others and help people continue to grow and build their business. And one of the things that I know in working in the mortgage business and that of working with realtors as well as other people is that one of the things that we can never have too much of is referrals. Now, Bob, in your book, Endless Referrals, one of the things that you reference is, you know, what's the purpose of having an endless referral system?
Sure. You know, it's really a great question because, you know, why would a system be needed for referrals? Well, I think one reason is that referrals of in and of themselves are such an important part of doing business in a very fulfilling and profitable way that we want to give ourselves the best odds of succeeding in that area. I remember when I first got into sales 23, 24 years ago, I pretty much knocked on doors, was nice, wanted to add value to people's lives, but had no idea what to do. And one day in the bookstore, I came across a book with the title How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins. And the title just grabbed and fascinated me. How to Master the Art of Selling. There's an art to it. There's something there that tells you how to do it. I couldn't believe it. And so I went through the book, and I just absolutely, for 3 weeks, I just read and studied and practiced and drilled and rehearsed and the whole thing. And, you know, within a few short weeks, my sales just jumped dramatically. Why? There was a system. Well, the purpose of this system is really to show people who do not really enjoy the selling process. They're great, what Michael Gerber would call technicians. They love what they do. They believe in what they do. They love the value they can bring to others. But the actual selling or trying to elicit referrals is just not a fun part of what they want to do. So I put this together, this system together, really for those people so they could now feel very comfortable with the process. And yet for those people who already consider themselves to be good salespeople, good networkers, they're going to find hints in there, and they're going to find methods and so forth in there that's going to help even take their business to a higher level.
So are you telling me that some people don't actually enjoy the process or prospects of being rejected?
Every so often we come across one.
it's important. And one of the things we know that, you know, it's important to have a system in place. And when you mentioned Tommy Hopkins, that was one of the first books that I had read as well. And, you know, one of the things that that I really remember is his referencing, you know, the fact that you had to be belly to belly with people.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that one particular illustration. However, in order to get belly to belly with people, I mean, the first thing you have to do is have contact with people. And having a system that's in place, so you're not just doing it happenstance. just makes everything else so much easier.
Exactly. It's that predictability.
What you say the system is built around the concept of networking. So, you know, we're looking at networking in order to develop this never-ending stream of endless referrals. But doesn't networking sometimes, I mean, it can be interpreted in a number of different ways, can't it?
Yeah, not all of them good. We get the picture in our mind when we say the word networking of the stereotypical, networking sales guy, the fast-walking, slick-talking person who sort of works the crowd, hands out business cards, sticks a card aggressively into the face of everybody they meet and say, hey, give me a call, I'll cut you a deal. So many people still think of that, even maybe on an unconscious level, they think of that as networking. And of course, that's really not what networking is. I define networking as simply the cultivating of mutually beneficial give and take, win-win relationships. The key, the emphasis being on the word give. And, when this is done correctly, when it's done with a genuine caring about the other person, their wants, their needs, their desires, and when done following a system, a proven system, it will absolutely turbocharge and accelerate the number of A-list high-quality prospects you have to work with and the number of referrals you receive.
So there's two things at first that I hear. And the first one is that if you're going to go out and network, the first thing is you can't be a cave dweller, right? I mean, you have to get out and go out and meet people.
Right, you do. And more so, it's that when you do go out and meet people, that you do so in a very effective way. 1,000 times zero is still zero.
Exactly. And the second thing is, if you're out looking in order to give and give of yourself in order to help people, then it's a lot easier as opposed to just going out looking for business, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that really kind of takes us into the golden rule of networking. And that is simply, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust.
Can you repeat that just one more time? Because I think it's really important that people understand this.
Sure. All else being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And, I think intuitively we kind of know that, but we don't always keep it at top of consciousness. And yet when you break that down, the know, like, and trust, we would ask the question, do people have to know you to do business with you? Well, sure, they have to know you. They have to know who you are, at least, in order to do that. I mean, I love Ralph Waldo Emerson, but to paraphrase probably the one saying of his I don't agree with, it's, the person who builds a better mousetrap can sit back and wait because the world would beat a path to their door. And maybe it was true back in his time. I don't think it is at this time. So people have to know you, know who you are. As far as likability goes, my goodness, if there's one thing we've learned, it's that people will do things with, for, and about people they like. People will vote for people they like, even if they don't necessarily agree with that, with the person. They will even attribute good qualities to a person they like, even if there's no logical reason to do so. It's called the halo effect. They actually will just, they want so much to think of this person as a good person because they like them that they will do that. And then, of course, trust. Well, let's face it, right now we live in a very low trust society. And I read a great book lately called The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey, Dr. Covey's son from Seven Habits. And Stephen M. R. Covey just took trust from a soft skill to a quantifiable and measurable skill. And the premise of the book, the Speed of Trust, was that when there's trust, things happen. They happen faster. They happen quicker. They happen smoother. When there's a lack of trust or no trust, that's when everything gets lost in the bureaucracy and so forth. So really, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. The key, the mission, is to develop these kind of relationships with new people you meet so that these new people feel so good about you. They want to see you succeed. They want to help you find new business.
Now, is there an easy way in which to create that from the onset?
Sure, and that's exactly why we go with a system, why we follow a very specific system. And I Jim, I define a system as simply the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. The key is predictability. In other words, if it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired result of B, then you know that all you need to be willing to do is, you know, be willing to do A, and eventually you're going to get the desired results of B. I love what Michael Gerber, author of The E-Myth, says about systems, the benefit of systems, and I'm paraphrasing here slightly, so please pardon me. He says, systems permit ordinary people to achieve extraordinary results predictably. And I think that's so key. Now, you know, of course, we can also take that saying and turn it around and say, without a system, even extraordinary people find it difficult to predictably achieve even ordinary results.
It's absolutely true. One of the easiest things for people to take a look at when you look at systems and achieving great results from what otherwise would be ordinary people. I mean, you just look at McDonald's.
You know? Exactly.
I mean, whether you're walking into Palm Beach, Florida, or West Palm, rather, or whether you're walking into Los Angeles or Boise, Idaho. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're looking for fries and you're looking for a Big Mac, the odds are pretty good you're going to get the same one no matter where you're, you know, where you're at.
Absolutely. And you wouldn't think of paying, you know, over $1 million for a franchise, waiting in line for 3 years to get one, and moving your family in order to just for the opportunity, and then try to change their system.
No, absolutely not, because it worked.
Right, exactly.
So what you speak about, you know, having that specific system. How do you have it for networking for endless referrals? And what do you mean?
Well, you know, that's really what we that's really exactly what we teach. It's following that specific set of rules and principles so that you increase the odds of developing that know you, like you, trust you relationship with the people you meet. And so the things that you do from the beginning, from when you first meet that person to following through with that system, that's going to elicit that great relationship. You know, first, why do you even want that? What, you know, what are the benefits really of a referral-based business? And very quickly, it's that, you know, referred prospects are easier to set the appointment with. With them, price or fee is less of an issue. Now, that doesn't mean it's not an issue, but it's less of an issue.
Right. It doesn't mean that you can go out and charge 8% for a mortgage at the average going rate of 6.5%. But it does also mean that, at least in my business, that if you're within a quarter of a point, typically it's not that much of an issue.
Right, and the reason this happens is you're going in on borrowed influence, because that person, if you've been referred by that someone who that person knows, likes, and trusts, then they feel a sense of security. So that quarter of a point might say to them, you know what, it's worth it because, and I know this person's a good person because Dave and Mary so-and-so say this person's a good person who I can trust. I'm going to get, you know, it also, what it does is it allows you to sell on value instead of selling on price, which
right.
is key.
Yeah, well, because whenever you get the price, then you're basically turning yourself into a commodity.
A commodity, exactly. And that always ends up with who can give me the lowest price, and that's it. And that just, you know, it just doesn't work. It doesn't even work out well for the person who has the lowest price a lot of times, because what they had to do to get there means they're giving away their profit, and there's no reason to be adding significant value to someone's life without, in the business sense, without making a profit that's going to keep your company in business, that's going to keep you in business, and allow you to stay there long enough to be able to actually serve that person. So, you know, we want to be able to sell on value as opposed to simply price. Another great benefit of a referral is, of course, it's simply easier to close the sale. And whether you want to say close the sale, open the relationship, complete the transaction, or you know, whatever politically correct way we want to say it, the fact is at a certain point that person has to say yes, and it's easier and faster, quicker to do it because you're going in on borrowed trust.
Absolutely. In so many cases, you know, you'll have a situation where, whether it's from an ad or from any of the other types of marketing that we will do, and when you have that first conversation with somebody, you still have to win over the trust of that individual.
Mm-hmm.
You have to demonstrate to them and almost lead them to the path of letting them know that, hey, it's not just me that says I'm good. There are other people that say it too. But that's so different. It's so much different than if they've actually been referred by a friend or a family member or somebody else that they work with, know, and trust. Because whenever you do refer somebody, there's a certain part of you that goes along with that as well.
Sure does.
And you are expecting that based upon that referral that someone's going to take good care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's huge. What any other thing that's a major benefit as far as having somebody refer to you that you see?
Well, you know what I think really is that referred prospects, Jim, are already of the mindset that that's how you do business, so they're more likely to refer you to others. That's already a part of their paradigm, of their model. They met you through a referral, you're doing business, and they're going to refer you. So when it comes to the point later when you ask for referrals, the transition is so much easier because they're used to the fact that that's, you know, they don't have that worry of, well, gosh, if I refer business to the, is he going to make me look bad? And, you know, because you were referred by someone they know, like, and trust, and you made that person look good. So, so it becomes much less of an issue. So yes, the fourth one maybe even trumps the other three, and that is your referability quotient goes way up in that other person's mind because that's how they met you.
And, you know, that is such a great point because, you know, I think so often one of the things that many of us as salespeople typically tend to not be that good at is asking for referrals.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, you know, that we might be is, you know, you might be skeptical of asking someone for a referral. But if they came to you via a referral, well, they already know that's why they're there.
Exactly.
So in the future, if you need to pick up the phone and ask them if they know anybody that they can refer you to, or if they have anybody, more importantly, that they know is looking for the service that you have the ability to provide, they're going to be more inclined to do so.
Right, they sure will.
What, you know, I mean, this all just seems so incredibly obvious. So if that's the case, you know, why don't more people ask for referrals? And then, you know, even as much or even more important, when they do ask for them, why don't they get them?
You know, those are great questions. And as far as, you know, the reasons why most people don't ask for referrals, it basically, in my opinion, comes down to fear. There's a fear of being rejected. We talked about earlier about that. I don't think anybody likes being told no. I don't, you know. We've all been told, well, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting the idea. They're not saying no to you, they're saying no to the idea. Yeah, that's great, but really, you know, it still doesn't feel, at its best, it still doesn't feel good. So there's a fear of rejection. There's a fear that you will appear to be needy by asking. It's, by the way, it's a groundless fear as long as you're asking correctly. It's absolutely groundless. It will not be thought of that way. There's a fear of staying too long past the sale because you've already taken up enough of their time. Now, of course, if you recognize the value you're adding to their life, you're less likely to feel that way. If you feel you're doing something to them by making the sale instead of for them, then you're more likely to think that's going to be the case. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so these fears, you know, are things that are very easy to get over when you realize the value you're adding to that person. But then the last part, because you also asked, when they do ask, why do they usually not get them, this comes down to a skill set. There's a way to ask for referrals so that you're going to probably get them, and there's a way to ask for them that the person's probably going to answer by saying something like, well, I can't think of anybody right now, but when I do, I'll let you know. and you know not to go home and wait by the phone for their call because it's probably not going to happen. So,
well, sure, because I know in our business that it's very easy to ask. So, you know, do you know anybody that's currently looking for a great rate on a mortgage? Well, not right now. No,
yeah, not, it doesn't. Right, it just doesn't come up the top of mind. And you know, one of the reasons for that is that it's the way we ask. I mean, you know, we, as human beings, most of us know about 250 people. There's it's called the Law of 250, which was pretty much brought to the forefront by Joe Girard in his great book, How to Sell Anything to Anybody. And I never liked the title of that book, but it's a great book. And it has lots of great information from a guy who was 12 years in a row listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the most successful salesperson in the world.
The guy was just a machine.
He was a machine. Exactly. He was a selling machine. And he had a lot of wisdom, and you know, you and I have talked about in the past that, you know, if you want to learn this kind of wisdom, get around these people, or at least read their books, and so forth. And so I got a lot of use out of that book, and I loved what he said about the Law of 250, that basically most of us know about 250 people. And you know, it's sort of easy to go through that, and I do that at my live programs where I actually show people how they do indeed know that many people. But here's the thing, that it doesn't so much matter that you know 250 people or I know 250 people. It's that every person who you meet also knows about 250 people. So every time you develop a relationship with one new person and are able to develop that relationship to the point that that person feels so good about you, they know you, they like you, they trust you, they want to see you succeed, they want to help you find new business, every time you do that successfully with one new person, you've actually just increased your potential sphere of influence by 250 people every single time. Now, that's great, but let's now bring this back to asking for a referral and saying, you know, do you know anybody who needs A? Well, the way you're asking that, when you say, do you know anybody who needs, or who do you know who needs, this person, you're putting them in a position where, remember, they know 250 people, so when they're asked, do you know anybody who or who do you know, a collage of 250 nameless, faceless people float by their head, and they can't identify any one person. It's sort of like if you ask somebody, hey, do you know any good jokes? Now, I don't know about you or some of the people listening to this, but I can never think of any jokes when right. someone asks me, and yet I know tons of good jokes, or at least tons of jokes. So we need to make it easier for the person. Now, Tom Hopkins, in his great book, How to Master the Art of Selling, my first sales book I ever read, gave me a piece of advice that has worked for years and years and years and years, and it'll work for anyone who uses this. And what Tom Hopkins suggests is that we help people identify, be able to visualize in their mind's eye, small groups of people. Because when you give them a choice of people they can see, that they can easily visualize, now they're in a position to know if this person might be a prospect or not. So let's say, for instance, you're talking to Gary, and regardless of whether Gary's done business with you or not, he's a center of influence, knows a lot of great people. And so you might say to Gary, instead of saying, do you know anybody who or who do you know, you might instead say, now, Gary, I know you're a golfer. How often do you golf? And he says, oh, once a week. I'm out there every Sunday afternoon. And you might say, well, do you golf with different people every time or sort of with the same foursome? He says, oh, no, same group of people. We've been playing together for years. Harry Brown, Michael Cloud, Dr. Mary Ruart, the four of us have been golfing buddies for years. Well, boom, now he's just identified three people. So now you can say, well, do you think Harry or Dr. Mary or Michael might be in the market for or might be open to the idea of my contacting them for future, you know, what have you? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Let's move on to another site. We know he's a member of his Rotary Club, hasn't missed a meeting in 10 years. Now, we don't say, is there anyone in your Rotary Club? It might be too big a Rotary. Then you go back to that 250 problem.
Right.
Instead, we might say, is there anybody in the club or in the group that you sit next to every week or with whom you're particularly good friends or who you serve on a committee with? Well, now you're bringing it down to two or three or four people. Boom. Maybe yes, maybe no. Let's go to another frame. We know Gary sells office products, and he's on the board of directors. And we say, how many people serve on the board of directors with you? Well, there's four other aside from myself. Well, four is a good number. So we say, Gary, picture those people in your mind's eye. Okay, now we're giving him a chance to come up with, you know, individual people. Now, remember, once he comes up with a couple of names, now it gets easier and easier because the ice has been broken. You can also now go from specific to a little bit more general while still keeping it in specific niches. For example, who's his accountant? Or, think of the alphabet under A, who's his accountant? B, who's his banker? Or, never mind that in this case, but C, who's his chiropractor? D, dentist? E, electrician? F, and now you might say, you know, who do you go to church or synagogue or mosque with whom you're particularly good friends, his next-door neighbor, you know, what have you. So now you can bring it out, and as long as you know these in advance, now you're in a position to ask these and help him easily identify these people.
Absolutely. You know, I think another perfect example is when you're dealing with people that are going through different stages in life,
mm-hmm.
right? So mm-hmm. typically whenever a couple gets together and then they go out and they start to have kids, right? Well, I know that in my particular case, and I've seen it happen in hundreds of cases, with other friends of mine, is that you always typically tend to associate with a lot of people that are going through the same thing that you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with one particular group that I was involved with the church, over the course of 5 years, 5 to 7 years, we all had two or three children.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if you're involved in the sale of real estate, with each additional child, oftentimes we were looking to move. So it creates that sense of momentum that it's not just happening within you. So as you're trying to identify who it is that you could potentially refer, well, just look at the other people that you're hanging with that that have gone through a particular life change.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's having kids graduate from school, whether it's just having kids, whether it's kids that are getting ready to go into school. These are all different ideas that you can think of to help narrow that scope, which makes it easier for them to identify a specific person that they may be able to refer to you.
That's a great point, Jim. And what is key is that you should know which identifying questions you're going to ask before you start to speak with the person. So you don't have to be fumbling around and thinking of it. The more you know beforehand, and you should, because you're going to, by this time, you have a relationship with a person who knows, likes, and trusts you. And again, it doesn't matter whether they're a current client, although that's fine too, that's great, or just somebody who the relationship's developed to the point that you've earned the right to be able to ask them, knowing that they'd like to help you. The more you know in advance what you're going to ask, the more comfortable you will be, and the more comfortable you are, the more comfortable they're going to be.
That's a great point. And what when you have these people and they're turning into a group of referral partners or a referral network, one of the things I know that you mentioned was that you create almost like personal walking ambassadors.
Right. These are people who just not only do they know you, like you, and trust you, they absolutely want to spread the word about you. They want to sing your praises, and they will sing your praises to everyone they come across. They're also the type who, you know, they know what it is you do, they know the benefits you provide, they know the type of person you're looking for, and they're on the lookout for you. And, you know, all it takes is a few personal walking ambassadors, and wow, you know, that's... Now, there's a couple different types of personal walking ambassadors. There's one who, you know, it's great to have them out there. It certainly couldn't hurt. But there are some of those people who they have such high credibility with others that all they need to do is mention you and you're in. You know, and those are the personal walking ambassadors who, wow, you know, you've got a couple of those and it can just make all the difference. And of course, these type of people typically, as you and I have discussed before, hang out with similar people. So this can lead to more and more personal walking ambassadors. And when you have that, now your business becomes a lot more fun, certainly a lot less stressful, and without a doubt, a lot more profitable.
Without a doubt, when you can absolutely align yourself with some other people within your local communities that are seen as great people that are widely respected by many, and when you can nail someone like that and have them as a referral partner, it's just tremendous. You know, one of the things that I've always really enjoyed about the relationships that I've had with a number of different people, particularly that within the real estate business, is that one of the things that's great is not only do they become a personal walking ambassador, but more importantly, if you have that strong of a relationship with you or with them, they'll almost take somebody to the mat before they'll let them go somewhere else.
Mm.
So not only are they referring you, but if someone should mention that they're thinking about going with somebody else, it's like, well, what are you doing that for?
Exactly. Oh, absolutely.
You know, I told you, if you go down and meet with somebody else, I can't take control, and I certainly can't accept responsibility for the treatment that you're liable to get.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Now, you know, well, one of the buzzwords that we've seen, and you know, I've been a part of this when you've been involved in different networking groups or, you know, a networking after hours business function, so to speak. One of the buzzwords that we've heard or that we've often associated is work in a room or work in a crowd. You mentioned this, you know, about Slick Larry previously, the guy who's going through and patting people on the back. I mean, doesn't it help, or doesn't one have to be pretty slick and self-confident to do that, or American Indian?
No, it's a great question, because, you know, we do think of that person, and yet how many of you really like dealing with that kind of person? You know, I call this person the Herb Tarlick type
yeah.
of person. This is,
yeah,
you know, from WKRP, and since, remember?
Yeah.
And you know, the fact is, most people just would rather not deal with a Herb Tarlick. I've had people say to me, well, I could never, you know, be a good networker. Oh, and I'll say, well, why? And I say, I don't have that gift of gab. As though the most popular salespeople, the most effective salesperson, just blah, 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 blah. And people go, oh, good, I want to buy from you. When, of course, it's absolutely the opposite. The best networkers, the people who work a room best are the best listeners. And, you know, and so when someone says they don't have the gift of gab, I say, great, then you have the opportunity to be a great networker. Well, why? Because you're the type who will focus on the other person. You'll let the other person shine. You'll allow the other person to feel good about themselves. And when you can do that, now you're really on your way to, you know, cultivating that network.
Well, sure, because what's one thing people really love to talk about?
Well, themselves.
Their
favorite topic. Sure.
Absolutely. So in allowing someone to tell you all about them, what you're actually doing in that case is that you're actually demonstrating to them that you're very interested in them.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, the saying's been around for years. The people we find most interesting are the people who seem most interested in us. And I'll often ask my live audiences, have you ever had a situation where you were in a conversation with someone where that person pretty much let you spend the entire time talking about yourself? And when that was the case, didn't you kind of come away from that conversation saying to yourself, wow, what a fascinating conversationalist that person was? And, you know, and it's so true. Now, what I want to do is have the people following the endless referral system, I want them to be the great conversationalists.
So as we want them to be a great conversationalist, I mean, one of the things that's really important is the fact that in order to get someone to talk, in order to get them to talk about themselves and open up to you. I mean, there has to be some almost feel-good questions, aren't there?
Yeah, and that's exactly what they are. And the reason is we don't want to we might want to, but what we know is going to be most productive is to ask questions that are not salesy questions. Remember, everybody does that. They come with their elevator pitch that, you know, 15 or 30-second magical thing that person's going to want, which, of course, is totally counterproductive, and instead focus on that person by asking questions which are, as you said, feel good in nature. And I've got 10 of these in my arsenal, but you'd never have time to ask all 10. In fact, if you have time to ask two or three of them, you know, then that's fine. And if you'd like, I can certainly share those.
Please give us a couple.
Well, the first question I would ask, and let's just say you're talking to a guy named Gary, and we're going to go back to Gary who sells office products that we were talking about earlier. This is when you first are meeting Gary. And you met Gary, you saw Gary at the hors d'oeuvres table, he seems like a real center of influence, people are, you know, wave at him and he seems friendly, and he says, okay, this is a good person to meet, and not that you wouldn't be nice to everybody, but, you know, if you're at an event, it's a social event, a business social event, you're going to want to meet 4, 5, 6 really good people with whom you can start to establish business relationships, and that's great. So you introduce yourself to Gary, and you find out he's sales manager of Acme Office Products. They sell high-level copying machines. So the first feel-good question you ask Gary might simply be, how did you get started selling copying machines, or how did you get started in the office products business, or something like that? And Gary will tell you, because I call this the movie of the week question, because most people just love the opportunity to share their story, how they got started, and most people are, of course, very eye-oriented, and they just want to talk about themselves, where here you, who he doesn't even know other than just having met, you're asking him to share his story, which is a form of beginning to add value to his life. And so after he finishes, the next question you might ask could be, what do you enjoy most about what you do? Now, it might come across more like, wow, you must have had some great experiences through the years. What do you enjoy most about what you do? And again, you're not asking this as though you're Dan Rather from 60 Minutes. I mean, it's just very, very friendly and just, you know, very off the cuff. But, of course, you know these questions going in, which is why you can ask them off the cuff without feeling pressure of having to try to remember them. So you ask, you know, what do you enjoy most about what you do? Which really, Jim, flies in the face of so much traditional sales teaching where we're taught to immediately try and find that person's pain, right? So that you can come to the rescue with your terrific product or service. And, of course, right now this person doesn't know you well enough to go telling about his pain. And also, he may never even be a prospect. So you just kind of, by making him feel badly, you're accomplishing nothing good. So instead, find his joy. You know, what do you enjoy most about what you do? That's so much better than asking the opposite. You know, what do you hate most about what you do? And tell me, you know, while we're at it, how about this wretched excuse for a life you live, you know, which is going to have just the opposite effect. So no, you've asked a couple of these feel-good questions, and, you know, the rapport already is beginning to be established.
Well, you've given us, and I don't want to take you off track, but I know you've given us two, you know, how'd you get started in what you're doing? What do you enjoy most? Anything else that you might recommend?
Yeah, well, you know, once you found after asking those couple of questions that the rapport has started to become established, I have something I call the one key question.
Okay.
And, you know, to me, this is not one of the feel-good questions. This is its own separate question, and it's really only to be asked once the initial rapport's been started. But this one key question will separate you from everyone else and have this person really take notice of you and who you are. And the question sounds something like this: Gary, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Marjorie, that's really interesting what you do. Tell me, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Now, what have you done when asking that question? Really, there's a couple of things. One, you've just again showed you're different from everyone else this person's ever met who just wants to know, how can you help me? The other thing, though, is you've already demonstrated a willingness and a desire to add value to his life.
Yeah,
by showing that you want to make the investment in him and his success.
You've already thrown them off their track of what they expect.
Exactly.
Now, it's not a matter of what can I get from you, but, you know, as we tend to meet different people in our lives, one of the things that I really like to know is, who can I look for, or how can I know
sure
that this person is going to be good for you? Because we all know people that aren't.
Right, that's true, yeah. Plenty of them.
So that's really powerful. I have to tell you, I'm taking a lot of notes. One of the things that you also suggested was former FORM, didn't you?
Yeah, you know why? Because not everyone is a situation where you're going to be talking about business or where that might be the issue. And this person might be more someone who it will be easier to even get into friendlier, less businessy issues. FORM simply stands for FORM. F is family, O is occupation, R is recreation, M is message. F is asking someone about their family. Most people enjoy being asked about their family so they can brag about their talented spouse or their straight-A student athletic, you know, son or daughter. And so you can typically ask about family, and it's always a very safe bet to make that other person feel good about themselves. O, of course, is occupation. R is recreation, asking that person about the ways they recreate. People are typically very passionate about their recreation. Are they skiers? And then you can always go back to the feel-good questions. What do you, you know, how did you get started skiing? What do you enjoy most about it? M is message. Or what is important to them? Are they involved in a charitable cause? Are they involved in a political cause or a religious cause or whatever? You know, whatever it is that person would like to talk about, and they say, well, gosh, Bob, you said religion and politics, should never discuss them in public. Well, I don't think that's the case. What you don't want to do is argue about them, but you can certainly discuss them, you know, just be supportive. And so that's, you know, FORM, F-O-R-M, and it just allows you different questions you can ask, and it's an easy way of remembering, so you're really never at a loss.
That's a great idea, because so many times I've been in situations and you inevitably come across a dead spot in the conversation where you're just kind of at that point, okay, do we take this further, or do I just kind of go on? And in so many respects, you just never know what somebody else has the ability to bring to the table. And I think that, you know, the more people that we know and the more friends that we have and the more people that we can count on in order to be there for us, not only personally but also business-wise, the better off we all are. And in so many respects, I know that in my business, some of the strongest relationships that I have all come from evolving around the areas that you mentioned here, whether it's family, occupation, recreation, or message.
Sure.
You know, when I think about family, obviously I think of my kids and I think of school and that of my parents and whatnot. Occupation, obviously, is a huge part of all of our lives. We do that, hopefully, so that we have the ability to get some time to go out and play, And for anybody that's an avid golfer or a boater or skier, whatever the case might be, you're right. I mean, people are incredibly passionate about this. I mean, hopefully that's what we work for, that and family, right?
Sure.
And then finally, you know, one of the things that I've certainly found and I've taken time to become active in is a number of different charitable activities. And when you find people that are involved in different charities, these are people that truly are giving of themselves. And we're all very fortunate that we have an opportunity to earn a living in a number of different ways that relies in many respects upon the communities that we live in. So when you can give back, be it through whatever manner that you choose to, but people recognize that, and these people also are very connected to a number of different people within your community.
That's right.
So when you're looking for trying to land that one really strong person that we mentioned was a sphere of influence, these are the ways that you can try to discover who those people are. And by asking these questions, that's what opens the door.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
As we just mentioned that, you know, what's one of the best ways in which to... Well, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, there's different things that we can discuss. How about follow-up methods? You know, I think it's really easy for people to reach out and touch people in the beginning, but one of the most difficult things is, what's the best way to follow up with them after you have that first initial call or first initial meeting?
Yeah, and that's why it is important to keep it very simple and very easy to do. I'm a big believer in writing personal thank you, handwritten thank you notes when you meet someone, and it's actually very simple to do. I actually use an 8.5 by 3.5 inch note card. It's on 60-pound bond. It's not 60-pound card stock. And
okay.
So if you go to your quick printer and ask, you know, 8.5 by 3 inches, which fits right inside a number 10 envelope, it can actually even be a little longer. But so the key is that it fits right inside a number 10 envelope. And on 60 to 70 pound card stock, so it has more texture than just a piece of paper, but not quite as heavy as a postcard. And then I set it up so that there's the on the right side, upper right side, there is the company logo and so forth. There's contact information. There's on the far right side, there's a Head and Shoulders professional picture, and on the bottom there's the benefit statement scrolling across, and which is just a very short statement that says the benefits of a person doing business with them. Now, there's lots and lots of room, though, and space to write the note. And the note should be written in blue ink, because blue ink has been proven to be more effective both business-wise and personally than black ink. And then the note should simply read something such as Dear Tom, or Dear Mary, or Hi Gary, or Hi Joanne, or Dear Mr., you know, however it's been established. Thank you. It was a pleasure meeting you. If I can ever refer business your way, I certainly will. And that's it. Don't put put it in a number 10 envelope. Don't put a business card in there. That note card will serve the same purpose. Put it inside the number 10 envelope, seal it up, handwrite the person's name and address with blue ink, which you can do because you've got their business card. Hopefully you got their business card. And then, or you could always just look them up on whitepages.com, and 95% chance it's going to have their address.
White Pages or anywho.
Exactly. And then put a hand stamp, not a meter stamp, not a Pitney Bowes stamp in this case, but a hand stamp, and then send it out that very night or that very day. So it gets on that person's desk or at their home or what have you the very next day. What a great sign it is to that person that the day after you met, you asked them the feel-good questions and you asked how you could know if someone's, but now you're not someone who just talks, but you're someone who actually takes action. To write a handwritten note on your personalized note card, which very rarely do they get one. That they even before email, people hardly got handwritten thank you notes like that. Now with email, very seldom.
Yeah, practically non-existent.
Exactly.
The one thing that I also like that you mentioned here is that when you have your personal note card, it's not just enough to have your name on it or your information, because in some respects, you know, depending upon what took place with that person the night that you met them, they may not remember who you are, or they may not remember who you look like. So it's just one other thing that you can do, mm-hmm. in which to ensure that when they get the card, not only are they going to recall the event or whatnot, but they're also going to remember exactly what you look like.
Sure, people think in pictures. It's just a universal law. Now, we process information different ways, you know, by visually and by, you know, auditory, which is by sound, and kinesthetic, which is by touch. Absolutely. But we think in pictures. So as long as it's a universal law, we might as well tap into it, you know, and have it work for us and make sure that person knows who we are. And again, it's just a great feel-good way for that person to also know, wow, you know, this is a person worth taking seriously. This is a person of value. And so it's just a great way to, but, you know, that in and of itself probably isn't going to get you business, and that's not what it's designed to do. It's just designed to, although if the timing's right, actually it will. But let's put that aside because that's not the goal in this case, that immediate goal, but it's to continue to develop the relationship. Now, we've always heard that it's good to send people things out of the newspaper that might be of interest to them if you see their picture. But, you know, how often does that really come up? But let's say, you know, you know that Gary collects antiques, and you see an advertisement in the newspaper, an article about antiques, and you say, okay, great, well, cut that out and put it in the number 10 envelope, attach it to the note card with a note written in blue ink. Hi, Gary, I know you love antiques, thought you might find this interesting. Boom, that would be wonderful to send. But now you've got to ask the question, okay, but what if something like that doesn't come up? Well, this is where a little imagination and the use of the internet really works, because you can just simply do a Google search on antiques, you know, antiques, how to buy or how to sell, and there'll be reams of information for you to download, free information that they want you to download, they want you to read, and just print it out. Don't send it to them as an email attachment. Everybody does that. Instead, print it out, fold it up, paperclip it to the note card that says, "Hi, Gary, I know you love antiques, thought you might find this helpful." Put it in a number 10 envelope, hand stamp it, hand address it with blue ink, and send it to him. Do you think he's going to find that to be of value? Absolutely.
One of the things that I recommend too, as we talked about, when you're talking with people, particularly for the first time, and as you're trying to ask different questions about things that are of interest to them, as you're going through either family, occupation, recreation, or message, there are going to be specific things that are going to come up in the conversation that you know that are going to be important later. And one of the things that I have found, particularly in the past, and I still carry them around to this day, is that after you get done with that conversation, one of the first things that you should do is pull out a little notepad or a little index card if you happen to keep it with you when you're ever involved in a situation like this, and write down a few key things that you just took for that conversation that are going to be important for you going forward. So if you need to reference a specific thing, you know, whether it's recreation or whatnot, that you have it there so you don't have to worry about it.
Great idea.
And let's see.
Now, you know, when we talk about follow-up, Jim, and there's so many different ways, and we just mentioned just a couple quick ones. But, I mean, there's little things that you can send, such as booklets that are inexpensive but really add value to that person. And they perceive it as value, which is the key. You know, someone like Charlie Jones at Executive Book sells a whole ton of those little booklets, abridged versions of some of the classics. I have a booklet called The Success Formula that you can read it for free at www.thesuccessformula.com, and we sell these in hundreds because people use them as prospecting tools. But Charlie at executivebooks.com has a whole bunch of them, and there are many others out there that you can use. But I'll tell you a great way of follow-up. Because, again, remember, every contact with this person should be of value to them. Whenever you can refer business to other people, that's the very best way of follow-up you can possibly have. So find out from these people. When you ask, how can I know if someone I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you, or even if they're not in sales, how can I know if someone I'm talking to is someone you'd like to meet? I remember getting a key piece of business and ensuing referrals because I found out during a conversation asking the form questions that this person's daughter had just graduated college. So I was able to set him up with the owner of a company that ended up hiring the gal, Beth, to do an internship, the daughter. Well, you know, the father was very, very happy that I was able to do that.
Incredibly happy.
Yeah, and so, it's those kind of things. We just have to think a little bit away from the product or service and just ask ourselves, how do I add value to this person's life? And to the degree that you do that, that's the degree to which your network is going to grow and grow and grow.
That's just a great point. One of the things I know that you're a huge believer in are testimonial endorsements. Mm. Why are those important?
Well, you know, I think Joe Polish, one of today's really fantastic copywriters, said it best. He said, "What other people say about you is infinitely more believable than what you say about you, so let other people say it." And, you know, it really comes right down to that. When you've got other people singing your praises, it just has so much more credibility than when we sing our own praises.
It really does. You know, and two things that I would add to that. I mean, you mentioned the fact that, you know, we can Google people and we can Google topics and come up with a number of different things. One of the things I know is that whenever I'm going to meet with somebody, certainly one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to Google them.
Mm-hmm.
And today, with so many people having their own personal websites, one of the things that's important, I think it's, if you can do anything in which to have either an audio or even better, a video testimonial, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to simply that of a text testimonial,
mm-hmm.
it just kills it in terms of setting you apart from others and putting people in the position to where it's a heck of a lot more believable than having a testimonial from John Q.
Exactly, right.
You know?
Or JQ, you know, it's like, not that they're from anywhere, right? Just JQ, you know.
Exactly. So it's really strong that if you can do that, and then take it and put it to work for you. I know we're just about up with our time here, but one of the things I did want to touch on is that one of the things you say, you have to really truly position yourself as a center of influence. I mean, how do we do that?
You know, you do that by doing the best you can to give to others, by providing value to others, by setting people up with others, by being an information resource and source for others, by putting other people's interest even ahead of your own, if we may, by saying that you know, to the degree that, as Thomas Powers says, you can suspend your self-interest willingly, you know, you develop so many seeds of goodwill and so many people who feel so good about you, again, who know you, like you, trust you, want to see you succeed, want to do business with you, want to refer you to others. You just develop that, and you become that center of influence. And now is, you know, and it's sort of self-fulfilling, because now as you refer others, well, you're that person with all the credibility. You're the person who others want to, you know, to have give the testimonial and so forth. So, you know, really it just sort of goes circular. But really it comes right down to, you know, really being a go-giver. And as you do that, you're going to cultivate a network of endless referrals business and just make your life a whole lot easier and more profitable.
I know one of the things that I always try to do is to have a list of people, whether it's contractors, since I happen to work in real estate and mortgage, you know, if somebody needs a pool, if somebody needs a carpet
mm-hmm.
cleaner, somebody needs whatever, I always try to have these people available to me so that whenever that particular need arises with someone that I know, that I can refer that person.
Exactly.
And one of the easiest ways I've ever found in order to get a referral from someone like that is to, in fact, refer them someone. And it's very simple how that works. But, you know, Bob, you've just shared with us a number of really good ideas and points that people can take home and implement immediately into their business. If somebody wanted to look you up and get additional information, what would be the best way to do so?
They're welcome to visit our website, www.burg, which is burg.com. And they can pick up endless referrals by going either to Amazon.com or the bookstore, and the same with my book, The Go-Giver. You know, I always look forward to hearing from people, and I really thank you so much for having me on this call. You know, I really, and I've told you this before, but I just love what you do. I love what your company does. You provide so much value to people and so many by really providing them with the skills and the environment to be able to really thrive in their businesses, which is just so important today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I thank all of you for taking the time to set aside an hour out of your busy schedule in order to listen to another in the series of Gift of Knowledge conference calls from Loan Toolbox, and I appreciate it. And once again, this is Jim Sanger, and I look forward to coming to you soon. Thank you very much.